Welcome to Behind the Lore, your behind-the-scenes look into the research that it takes to make each episode of Lore Podcast. I'm Allie Steed, and today I'm sitting down with Jenna Rose Nethercott to discuss the research she did for episode 233, Down to Earth. In this episode, Jenna Rose and I have created the perfect new horror alien TV show, explored human responses to extreme fear, and closed with great enthusiasm on Star Poop. Your support keeps us going, so once again, we're thrilled to have you here with us. Please join us for a new episode of Behind the Lore. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Behind the Lore. I am once again here with Jenna Rose Nethercott, and we are doing cryptids this week.
Woo! Spooky guys! Spooky little guys. They're everywhere. Look out.
Spooky little dudes. Yeah, I love our little Monster of the Week episodes, because they are usually funky little dudes, and, you know, you get to... you seem to get most of the cryptid episodes, honestly, now that I'm thinking about it.
I do, and it's because I call dibs on them. and which is interesting, because I'm actually not a big cryptids guy. Like, the folklore that fascinates me the most is not cryptozoology. I'm just kind of like, okay, they probably saw, like, something in the woods and got spooked. But they're really interesting to research because of the ways that the stories are reported. So that's why I think they're fun to do, is because, you know, I guess if I was hearing an episode, the cryptid episodes would be the ones I'm less interested in. But when I'm reporting and researching an episode, I love them because I get to, like, sort through old police reports, and get to, like, call small town libraries and be like, do you have this one book that has this one sighting? It just, they're the episodes where I feel like I get to be a real detective, and I like that.
Yeah, you were I forget what the monster was now, but we were, like, combing through the police reports you found, and
yes, so
the whole
sick.
Nine yards.
That was, I think that was the Big Muddy Monster, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, that's right. That's
where
right.
It was like a whole folder of police reports, like hundreds of
so
pages.
Much
Not
stuff.
Only police reports, but like letters people had written to the police department from all over the country with like theories and sightings, drawings little kids had sent in from like back in the 70s or something. It was, yeah, I love that stuff.
Which,
so
it's kind of amazing they kept all of it.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Honestly. You can find it all online.
Yeah? Go look it up.
Go look it up.
We are on the Flatwoods Monster today. I know I ask this every time, but, like, I am honestly surprised by some of the answers, because most of these stories I do not know before the pitch meeting at, like, the very earliest, and then I immediately purge all of that knowledge from my mind as soon as that week is over, because I want to be surprised when I'm reading the outlines. It's fun for me. I get a whole new story. So had you heard of the Flatwoods Monster before doing the research?
Nah, dude.
I hadn't heard of any cryptids coming
I heard
of West Virginia besides Mothman.
Yeah, but no, hadn't heard of the Flatwoods Monster, but had a great time hanging out with him.
Yeah. He was, in fact, the definition of a weird little dude.
Weird big dude, though. He was like 10 feet
big
tall.
Big dude, actually. Yeah, he was not that little. And I have to say, Kathleen May is an absolute real one. Just her kids see this weird fireball. She decides to bring a neighbor kid because he just joined the National Guard. And they all just jump in a car and go looking because the kids are curious. My ass would have been locked in my house. I'm not coming out until daytime. I do not want to go investigate.
Oh, I thought it was great that Erin compared it to like a 1950s Stranger Things, because she has like real Joyce Byers energy.
She
in a
does,
big way.
And it's exactly what I was thinking of when I was reading through your research.
This was such a fun one to read about, specifically because of the like kids on bikes energy that it had. They weren't on bikes, they were on foot, but yeah, it's this like ragtag group of friends.
Vibe.
A like 17-year-old National Guardsman, which is basically like a bona fide Boy Scout, and then this like grown ass woman traipsing through the woods with a dog looking for an alien. Like, I love it. It's just like I would totally watch a movie of this or a TV show.
I would.
Oh my god. Which reminds me, I just watched the pilot for the TV show Roswell. I watched both the 1999 pilot and the 2019 uh-huh. reboot pilot, and it includes the greatest line I've ever heard in anything.
Oh, you have to tell me now.
Okay. So this actually might have been the second episode I've watched too. This was in the 2019 one. So basically, very little spoilers because it's like right in the beginning of the show, but there's a human girl and an alien boy, and there's romantic tension, and she's just found out that he's probably an alien. And so she like looks into his eyes and she's like, "Are you an alien?" And he says, "I'm a son, a brother, and a cop."
What does that mean?
Oh, God.
I was going to say that has big Twilight energy, but honestly, that's worse.
They've surpassed it. It's the best line I've ever... I was watching it in a hotel room while I was on tour, and I screamed aloud in this, like, quiet Holiday Inn Express, you know? "I'm a son, a brother, and a cop." But
sure,
also, he is
that.
An alien. Like, the answer is yes.
That's a hell of a way to get around that question, I have to tell you. Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
That's going to be on my mind for the rest of the day. I hope they took advantage of that merch opportunity, because...
I want a shirt. I want
no
that.
Context,
I want the Jeff Booty shorts and the son, a brother, and a cop t-shirt, and then I am complete.
If you rock up to your next book reading in that outfit, I don't know what I'm going to do.
I'm going to sell out, baby. That's going to be it. I'm going to shoot right to the bestseller list.
Well, you'll shoot right to the top of some kind of list, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I love a CW show. I eat that shit up. It's so goofy.
They're the best terrible shows. I thoroughly enjoy them.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was relevant to this episode in that the Roswell the Roswell vibes were in the air when this was all going mm-hmm. on. So yeah, Kathleen May was just like ready to go. She's like, "I don't know. There might be an alien out there and I'm going to catch it. I'm going to see it." Her hair probably looked impeccable. Her nails were probably on point. She was a beautician.
Full
so,
new
like,
look, outfit.
Oh,
like
God.
She was ready to roll.
Yeah, she was like a
and
50s housewife
so
just like on a hunt for an alien in the woods with a bunch of boys. What a rock star.
Can we write this movie and or TV show?
Yes.
Like, okay. We're going to figure that out.
Another podcast pitch.
I think it could be fun. I think it could be fun. I have to say, though, I do not have the most amount of respect for their self-preservation instincts, because if my dog turned around and immediately booked it out of there like Ricky did, I would simply go home. Whatever landed there, that's none of my business. My dog thinks the vibes are off. I am out.
I think a 17-year-old National Guardsman with a flashlight would really instill me with all the bravery I need.
You know what? You're right. How dare I question this 17-year-old Eagle Scout.
Aw, bless him. Yeah, no, I actually think that by the time I was that far, I would keep looking. But it's
you're
hard
in
to
it
know.
To win it?
Yeah, I think I'd be in it to win it. I'd want to know.
That's fair.
Especially, well, you know, like, you know, they didn't know there was going to be an alien. They saw a meteor fall. So if you thought you were going up this hill and going to see, like, a freshly fallen meteor.
That's true.
I would be psyched. Though I guess they probably were thinking about aliens because it was, like, Roswell era.
Roswell era, yeah. And I grew up in the woods. I'm not going looking for anything at night. If it can't wait till morning, I don't want it.
I also grew up in the woods, and there's stuff out there for sure.
Uh-huh. 100%.
And that stuff 100%. Will eat your cat. Let this
please
be a PSA to you. Keep your cat inside at night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they go, they have their whole sighting, and the fact that people come back the next day and for, like, a while afterwards, if I'm understanding it correctly, and they comment on the lingering smell is something that's so interesting to me. It's like the story of molasses on a warm day in January in Boston after the molasses flood. Like, oh, you can still smell the molasses. Like, it's wild to me that scents linger like that in people's memories, if nothing else. And you have this quote from one of the papers that kind of explains why later visitors knew about it. And it wasn't just a spontaneous thing where they were just like, oh, this smell, and their account matches somebody else's.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure which quote you're referring to, actually. So if you have it in front of you, let me know.
But I do.
Yeah, but basically, one of the things I think is really interesting about, like, scent memory is that, neurologically speaking, smell is the closest linked to memory, which is why, like, you'll smell something that smells like your grandfather's cigar or your mother's perfume, and it'll, like, catapult you back there, is because just in the brain, smell of all the five senses, or if you're a true believer, six senses, is really, really close to memory. But, yeah, I mean, there weren't... What was the quote that you were referring to?
I think I worded that question badly because I was more talking about the fact that, like, one of these groups, their account of what happened and the smell and everything made it to newspapers, and then everybody reads these newspapers. So these newspaper accounts say that they were all vomiting for several hours because of the metallic-smelling mist that they inhaled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they say that when people came up the next day, they could still smell this metallic scent. There was also this other sighting in a different location, like it was, what, like 20 miles away, something like that, where another metallic scent was in the air. And I think especially in something like a newspaper article, the sensory details really stick with people, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, those are the things you read and you're like, oh, okay, now I can really visualize myself there. And yeah, the visceral image of, like, everyone returning home and just, like, puking everywhere because of whatever they inhaled is scary, especially in the 50s, you know? This is, like, not super long after both world wars. Yeah. And so, like, mustard gas and stuff like that are still, like, pretty intense in the public consciousness. So airborne poisons are a real fear for people.
Yeah, yeah. Now, aside from the reports of the metallic smell and the results that came after, did they find any other physical evidence when the sheriff and the press and everybody else went tramping up that hill?
Yeah, so after Kathleen called the sheriff and called a newspaper, people went up to investigate. I think it was the next morning, but don't quote me on that. And so there was basically A. Lee Stewart, who was the co-publisher of the Braxton County Democrat. He interviewed a bunch of witnesses, and then he also went to the scene of the event with some other guys, and they brought, like, shotguns. They were ready to take this thing out.
To be fair.
Yeah, no, you know, you gotta come prepared. But they didn't find anything, but they did smell that weird metallic scent. And this was still the night of the incident, right after Kathleen had gotten back with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
They smelled that smell, but they didn't see anything visually. The next morning, he went back, and I think the sheriff went too, and they found this set of tracks in the mud, and they also found this thick black gelatinous substance, which later they realized that another guy who had also heard about what was going on went up to investigate in his truck, and his truck had left the tracks, and the truck was, like, leaking oil, and that was the substance. So, you know, it was not an alien, it was a truck. But a quote that I really love from Stewart is, after he interviewed the witnesses, he said, and I quote, "Those people who reported seeing the thing were scared. Bad scared."
That certainly gets your point across.
Yeah, which, and I think that's almost the most interesting part of this story to me, is, like, these people were so convinced that they'd seen an alien and were so terrified that, like, I think that's why they were throwing up. I think these people had spooked themselves so bad that they were, like, puking out of fear, which is kind of awesome, honestly.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, it does make sense because, like, powerful smells, they can overwhelm you and everything, but, like, fear, like, anxiety makes me nauseous.
Oh, yeah.
It gets bad enough. We've all been there. So that is a totally plausible theory to me, that it wasn't, maybe they imagined the smell, or maybe it was something coming off of whatever did fall out of the sky, but they made themselves so scared they got sick.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And again, like, as we keep touching on, this was right after the Roswell incident. So, like, these were people who were already thinking about aliens, already afraid of aliens, already going up there expecting to see an alien, perhaps.
Right.
And so, like, they really psyched themselves out in a big way. You know, and I mean, again, this is me coming from a perspective of being like, it probably wasn't an alien. I think Aaron kind of pitched that, or like presented the episode in almost right. the opposite way, where he's like, it couldn't have been an owl. I'm like, I think it could have been an owl.
It was definitely an alien.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, whatever your personal opinion is, power to you. But I think almost, for me, again, always what's most interesting to me is the assumption that these things aren't real and what right. it says about the people. So from that perspective, from that narrative perspective that I find interesting, I think this idea of people being obsessed with aliens in this particular time period, seeing this like shooting star during a meteor shower and going up to investigate and then like convincing themselves so thoroughly, not only this group of kids, but their mother and mm-hmm. this National Guardsman, like all seeing and having this like shared delusional interpretation of something and like yeah. basically all of their fear feeding into each other's fear mixed with cultural fear leading to a physical reaction. I think the whole thing is really, really interesting.
Yeah. And it does kind of say a lot about us that they go to the paper and this gets printed and it gets reprinted because, you know, it's an interesting story and it eventually makes national headlines. And then a few hundred people come to look for the monster. Like, I can't picture something like that happening today necessarily on such a wide scale, although there was the Area 51 thing a few years back where people just went to see if they could break in for the hell of it. But I feel like we're the species of we're here for a good time, not a long time. So we might as well go find out what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I could totally see this happening today. But I also do think that, like, with the internet, you can kind of do that from the safety of your own
comfort
home.
Comfort and safety of your own home.
But yeah, I love these, you know, cryptid trippers that will hear about a monster and then just, like, voyage out and everyone flocks to this small town. And then the small town has to figure out how to handle this and whether they can monetize it. It's just, it's all good
stuff. And most
stuff.
Of them do. They make a whole tourist industry out of it. Mm-hmm. We've had plenty of stories where the ending is usually something along the lines of, well, you can go down and this week during this month and there's a whole festival.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
can go looking.
You can go looking.
But if I remember rightly from your research, the current property owners of that hill do not want people going up there.
Right. Yeah. So even though the town has really commodified it and like cartoonized it and all of that, the actual property owners don't let anyone on the hill, which I think is fun because it just kind of makes it even more appealing and
right,
mysterious.
More mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do have to say, Flatwoods Monster is very straightforward. You know what you're getting, but you had a bunch of other names in your research. So I'm curious which one you like the best because I was partial to the Phantom of Flatwoods myself.
I think that's my favorite too. Yeah, there's the Flatwoods Monster, the Phantom of Flatwoods, the Braxton County Monster, Braxy, the Thing, the Green Monster. And when I was just reading back over this list before our interview, it reminded me when they caught the Night Stalker. Do you remember a few years ago when they caught the serial killer, the one, oh my God, what's his formal?
Eurons.
What?
Eurons, Joseph D'Angelo, the Golden State Killer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when they caught him, I was watching the press release live, and the head of the investigation was like, and finally, we've caught the Golden State Killer, the Night Stalker, the Creep Crawler, the Into Your Windows Man. Like, he just, like, went on this whole list of, like, the most insane, like, cartoony supervillain names I've ever heard. I'm like, this man has, like, killed people. Like, and you're just, it's
this
like
this
list.
Place.
And I was like, this is wild to listen to. Just this list of like the,
yeah, maybe
the like kookiest
maybe newspapers could have
little names.
The newspapers could have cooled it a little bit.
Oh my God. Yeah. So yeah. I like the Phantom of Flatwoods as well. But yeah. the Thing is also pretty good.
See, Braxy is a close second for me.
Oh, that's my least favorite.
It's
I don't like any of the little cutesy ones. I don't know. I think
that's fair. He is a 10-foot-ish tall nightmare being, so
yeah,
I feel
give
like
him
Braxy
some respect.
Is a little. I'll give him some respect when he comes out of the woods.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because he's definitely listening to this, you know.
Yeah, Braxy, if you're listening today, feel free to call in and set the record straight.
Yeah. So I'm curious, what do you think happened to the creature, where it disappeared to, or what it might have been? Like,
I think it was an owl.
You think it was the owl. And it just, like, it seems like it was too big to be an owl in my mind. Like, maybe a bear, but I don't know.
I think it was an owl because I think that the cowl that they saw were probably its open wings behind it.
Maybe.
And I think the fact that they thought it was 10 feet tall was because it was up on a branch in the air. And the body of the tree was probably coming down below it. I think that they were expecting to see something scary, so they saw something scary. But that said, I don't know. You know, this is me just speculating. Right. It could have been something wiggity-whack. Who can say? but yeah, where I think it went, I think it flew away on its wings to go kill a woman and throw her down a staircase. It all comes back to the staircase.
It always comes back to the staircase.
Every owl is headed for the staircase eventually.
They all find a staircase eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So pivoting a little bit, because normally we don't have a ton of time to discuss
the epilogue, because believe me, guys...
We could probably go on for hours if we wanted to. Like, you've never heard at any of our meetings. It's like herding cats once we get on a subject. But Jenna Rose very specifically said she was really excited about her epilogue. So give me the rundown on the Star Jelly.
Oh my God, Star Jelly. So I love Star Jelly. This is the one thing where, like, if I'm at a party and I'm telling people what my job is and I'm like, I'm full of cursed facts, they're like, tell me a cursed fact. And I'm like, well, have you ever heard of Slime of the Stairs? And they're like, no. And I was like, let me tell you, kid. So I am obsessed with Star Jelly. I had never heard of it before. Aaron selected it as the epilogue for this episode. Thank you, Aaron. You've changed my life. I cannot get enough of this Star Jelly. So there's so much Star Jelly content that I did in this research that did not make it into the epilogue, and I can't wait to tell you all about it. Okay, so quick recap for those of you who forget. Okay, I should calm down. I just love Star Jelly.
No, this is cute. I love the enthusiasm.
Okay, so long story short, ever since like the 1300s-ish, there have been reports of essentially some guy seeing a shooting star, seeing it land in a field somewhere, going to the spot they saw it land the next morning, and instead of finding a rock, finding just a weird pile of jelly. And it's been something that's been reported on over and over and over again, like hundreds of times over centuries. And so, yeah, one of the things I love about it is its various names. Some of those names Aaron did list in the episode, but there's two of them that, well, one of them he listed as my favorite. He said the researcher for this episode has a favorite, and that's me. But he didn't say why it's my favorite, and that's the spelling. So, okay, the earliest incarnation of it was called Slime of the Stars, but spelled S-L-Y-M-E. Of the S-T-E-R-R-E-S. And I just... Slime of the Stairs. I just love that so much. I love slime spelled with a Y. I love stars spelled S-T-E-R-R-E-S. I'm just delighted by that. So that's one.
Yeah.
Also, in Mexico, in parts of Mexico, it is called Caca de la Lune or Shit of the Moon.
Which sounds much nicer in Spanish.
Oh my God, it's so good. And so, okay, there was this one scientist, kind of quack scientist, researcher, doctor, who I believe was mentioned some in the episode, but he believed that Slime of the Stairs could treat abscesses. And so he literally would like go hunting for star jelly and then try to like smear it on people. And other doctors
I feel
were like,
I would have tested that first.
I know, right? Like,
don't do that, bro.
Yeah, other doctors were like, I don't think you should do that. And he's like, what? No, it's great. Just check it out. Let me just wipe this in an open wound.
Please don't do that.
So
that's
I love
stressing me out.
That. I love that a lot. So basically, it's been seen over and over and over again, just like weird goo. And there's all these thoughts as to like, what is this? Because, you know, as far as we understand, meteors don't turn into jelly upon hitting the Earth. And, you know, as we discussed a little in the episode, some of the theories back then were that, like, the stars essentially had excrement. So it's like the stars were, like, shitting on the Earth, and this was the result, which, again, pretty sure that's not how stars work, you know?
Yeah.
So the question is, what the heck is this, right? Because people have been finding it, and, like, people continue to find it. There was an incident only a few years ago, I think, like, within the last decade or two, where Scotland, like, a whole town, like, people's porches, they woke up, and it was just, like, covered in slime.
And, ew.
Yeah, so it's, like, it's going down out there. And so there's different theories as to what this star jelly might be. And one of the theories is that it could be a slime mold, where some slime molds are basically invisible when they're dry, but then if they get rained on, they basically turn into, like, they swell into a gelatinous pile. And so it could be the kind of thing they think where, like, someone who may be familiar with this area and has never seen this stuff before then goes out after a rain and suddenly there's goop everywhere and they're like, where did this come from? And they look at the sky and they're like, oh, it must have fallen from the sky. Another interpretation is that it might be birds regurgitating up frog parts. So basically, like,
that's so
half
specific.
Digested, like, frog goop. Including,
that's so specific.
Yeah, including frog egg sacs, which would be that jelly stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, basically, long story short, they're like, they don't know. Like, no one knows what this stuff is. And people are like, well, we can make our best guesses. Maybe it's the slime mold. Maybe it's, like, being puked up. Maybe it's jellyfish being washed onto the shore. Like, who knows? But ultimately, people are like, I don't know. It's just some weird goop. From who knows where. And I love it. I love it so much.
What a weird little thing, whatever it is.
Isn't it so? And I feel like that is one of those, that story and, like, that substance is one of the reasons I love this job and that I love lore in general, is it's something you would have no reason to ever hear about.
Right.
You know, like, I've worked as a folklorist, like, my whole adult life. I'm in my 30s. I've never heard of star jelly before. And I love that I get to just wake up one morning and learn that it's out there and it's gooping.
You're handed star jelly on a silver platter.
And it's been there forever. It's been there since the 1300s, you know, and we just didn't know. And now you all know.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to bring this to the masses.
Now you can go to parties and be like, have you heard of slime of the stairs?
Please let us know how that works out for you.
Yeah, it's a great pickup line. Works every time. Just kidding.
Remember,
it's
we're
never
not an advice
me.
Podcast. This works on a very specific group of people, and
it's
pretty sure most of them work in this office.
Yeah, it's a real litmus test, you know? It's like my go-to of taking a date to the cemetery. Like, it tells you a lot about a person. Tells you everything you need to know, what they feel about slime at the stairs.
Definitely let us know how this works out for you.
Please do.
I need to know. Thank you all very much for listening. I had a great time with this episode.
I did too. It was such a fun one. If any of you happen to ever have seen any slime of the stars, I swear to Christ, tell me. I will flip out. I will be so excited to hear that. So if you've ever found any, like, weird gelatinous stuff with no explanation, maybe I shouldn't word it that way, but, like, you know, if you heard this description and are like, wait a second, I think I might have encountered something like that, like, I am begging you to
get
in touch
with us. Get in the comments. Get in the comments. We need to know.
Well, thanks, Allie. This was a blast. Thank you for indulging me and letting me talk about slime of the stairs.
Hey, we're here to get excited about the weird stuff that we research, so.
Absolutely.
Thank you for sitting down with me today.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all. And that does it for today's episode of Behind the Lore. Many thanks to Jenna Rose for chatting with me today. A lot of folks don't know this, but Lore is actually part of a larger network of shows called Grim and Mild, and you can learn more about those shows and everything else going on over at one central place, grimandmild.com. On behalf of the entire Lore team, thank you for your constant and generous support, and for letting us tell you our stories. And until next time, thanks for listening.